With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, close your eyes, Francis. Close your eyes.
I've been riding shotgun underneath the hot sun.
Hey, is George on there?
No, it was just me.
Oh,
it was just me.
Yeah. Maybe I'm going to play one of my songs at the end of this
podcast. No way. Are you actually going to do that?
Yeah, maybe.
Where, at the end of part one?
Stay tuned and see.
End of part one or part two?
End of part two.
Well, you should do also something the end of part one so they listen to that as well. What are you going to do there?
Just provide a lot of insight into the music industry from my perspective.
Like what kind of stuff?
From my amateur musical perspective.
Musical?
I don't know what this is. Not a great intro, is it?
It's a great intro. What are you talking about? You can't just say that as we're going into intro with one of our biggest guests.
Ladies and gentlemen. One of our biggest guests.
You can't just say this isn't a great intro and then say go straight into, ladies and gentlemen, one of our biggest guests.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of our biggest guests of the day.
It's the only guest of the day.
Here he is, the man of the hour.
Why is he the man of the hour?
The man of...
yeah?
The man of the minute, the man of the hour, the man of the moment. Here he is.
No, he's not.
George Ezra.
You can't intro with that. You have to intro with more. Ladies and gentlemen, very excited today. One of our biggest guests we've ever had on the podcast. And now a friend of ours. I'm a huge fan. So is Francis. Mr. George Ezra is on the podcast.
George Ezra, here he goes.
Well, he's not about to perform, though. But here he goes. He's not about to perform.
The moment you've all been waiting for. George Ezra, here he is.
Stop trying.
Over to you, George Ezra.
Enjoy the podcast, everybody. George Ezra.
Francis, how have you been finding it all, mate?
Yeah, I mean, it's been... it's been long. It's been a long time.
Hasn't it gone like that?
It has, but I guess because it's the sort of monotony, of sort of everything sort of blurring into one. And we're very adaptive. Humans are very adaptive animals.
I thought you were about to say I'm very attractive.
That goes without saying, yeah. Jimmy.
Yeah. I'm just very attractive.
You were thinking it, obviously, and you thought I was going to say it. You're waiting for me to say it, but then I didn't, and you were disappointed.
No, I've worked out that the one thing I've worked out in lockdown is that I've become more and more unattractive as it's gone on.
Yeah. Hey, join the club.
Yeah, George, what about you? Have you become more attractive or less attractive? What do you think?
That's a game of two halves. So I found the first half of everything. I was on top of it. I was like the best I've ever looked, and now it's definitely gone the other way, and I'm actually the other side of it now.
Yeah, because now you just go, oh, fuck it.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely got to that point.
What we were saying before, what are your thoughts on lockdown? Are you okay with it? Are you relaxed? Are you into it? It has gone quick, as you said. It's gone like super quick, but also if you look back, it's an odd time.
Yeah. I go... I find that I'm some days I'm able to kind of almost tune it out, and whether or not that's the thing I should be doing, I find that I'm able to kind of live in my own bubble, and then some days that's just not possible, and then it's the uncertainty of everything. So obviously the uncertainty of how long does this last for, the uncertainty of who has the answers, all of these things start just and days like that can be just, it's overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's super overwhelming.
I think you're right, and also because it's this new virus, right? There are no experts on it, right? So everyone has suddenly become an expert. Everyone's trying.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've got a lot of mates that think they are.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a boxing match. You know, whenever a boxing match comes on and all of the lads get together, they're just like, hey, listen, he's probably going to knock him out in the third.
But only ever in the heavyweights. Only when it's heavyweight. It's like everyone suddenly is a heavyweight champion.
Yeah, and then they stand in front of the TV and they go, everyone says, oh, I should have done a right hook there.
Yeah.
No, fucking, when have you had a fight?
I'm so guilty of that shit. I like don't watch it ever, and then it will be like a big fight and it's suddenly I know everything. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sort of details of our lives. In the studio, I cannot wait, Mr. George Ezra.
Well, we're not in the studio, are we, Jamie?
No, we're not. I lied. Started off.
Over Zoom, you have to say. You have to edit your intro.
Over now. Zoom, George Ezra.
Yeah. Hey. I never know if I'm allowed to hype myself up at that point. Like, part of me wants to jump on the chair and go...
Hey, oh yeah, go wild.
No, George, it's not going to happen, Francis. It's a nice idea.
Mate, if I woke up every day and I was George Ezra, I'd wake up and go, I'm fucking George Ezra. that's what I would say most days.
I wish I had that confidence.
I wake up every morning and go, oh, I'm Jamie Lang, and it's just depressing.
I need another hair transplant. Oh no, I need another one.
George, can I say before we kick things off, and I don't want to fangirl over you, but I'm going to. I'm a huge, huge fan of yours and have been for years now. I was one of the... Because I think, you know, with you have kind of a real cult following. You know, you're huge and all these things, but you have those sort of fans who, from the very beginning, listened to your music and knew who you were.
Yeah.
And I was one of those people. I was one who introduced your songs to everyone.
Oh, mate. Thank you.
I'm not even kidding you. I used to play I used to play your songs to my buddy Ollie when I was living with him. You weren't there at that time, Francis.
Are you trying to take credit for George's success?
Yeah. Where's this going? Yeah.
I made you who you are.
Yeah.
And you're one of these sort of success stories that kind of I suppose you kind of were playing loads of music, doing great songs, and then it's kind of just gradually, you weren't like an overnight star in a sense, were you?
No, it kind of was a gradual. It's one of, you know, many things that I'm so happy about and I feel fortunate for was the fact that I'm able to look back and there's kind of in 6 month chunks or year chunks, it's like you're doing the open mics, you're supporting people on trains, it's easy to forget that time because quite a lot happens in a short space of time. But I essentially said to local promoters, I was in Bristol at the time, I was just like, I've got guitar. If you need people to open shows, I'm your man. And so I'd get a call half an hour before, 2 days before, whatever. And there would normally be a bit of dinner served. So like you're getting fed, and that's for me.
Well, like a buffet.
No, well, there's one venue I'm thinking about in particular called the Louisiana in Bristol. And it's a family run it and it's amazing. You get there and they put pasta on for every act playing. And for musicians, that's like if there's food, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And so it was just like the winning. If you got a gig at the Louisiana, it was like, oh, fuck yeah. That's brilliant. I don't need to worry about food that night.
Sorry, just to cut you off. I love the fact with Georgia. So if you go to if you went to the Oasis, they'd be like, ah, you got all the drugs, you got all the booze. You got pasta? Yep. I'm in. I'm totally there.
But that'll be a running theme throughout this conversation. That will happen again and again for sure, not just pasta but just me being very easily pleased.
But that's the best thing, right? I think that if you go into the problem is I saw an amazing speech once with I think it was Matt Damon, obviously he won an Oscar for Good Will Hunting, which he wrote with Ben Affleck, and he said he is so happy that he won an Oscar so young. because it made him realize how sort of meaningless winning an Oscar was, because you spend your entire life trying to reach that success and actually everyone's trying to get it from, they suddenly get the Oscar and they go, well, I'm not as happy as I thought I would be. It's kind of just the same as everything else. And I think being easily pleased and actually not kind of just... And just going like, oh, you know what? I get a bit of
being,
pasta
being
there.
Being grateful.
Being grateful.
Being grateful.
It is totally the best way to be, because otherwise you kind of get swept up in an industry which is can be pretty toxic and like upsetting and dismissive a lot of the time. You know what I mean?
Well,
and
soul destroying, I imagine. You know, that touring in and out daily like grind of traveling all around the world. I mean, obviously, it's got its perks, but it must also wear you down. Like, as we've seen some musicians fall foul of it.
I think that, for me, there's a few parts to that. So, like, the reason music always appealed to me and still does is because I don't associate any competitiveness with it. And so it was very much like, as a kid, it felt very much there's no right or wrong, and therefore I can't be wrong. Which was kind of appealing to me. But I think the burnout that you see on tours and with musicians is because, and this is just speaking for my own, but the feeling I feel when I'm performing, the adrenaline that I experience, it can't be reproduced. And so, but there's a part of you that wants to reproduce it because you don't want it to end. But but then that's where you burn out, because you're trying to recreate that feeling again and again and again, and it's not going to happen. I think that's where people start to burn out.
Well, we kind of experienced that, Jamie, didn't we, when we did our tour, right?
When we were doing
26 people in Southport.
Yeah.
We were just spending the rest of the like month just trying to replicate that feeling.
George, we went and did this sort of comedy tour. We went to Southport and it was the biggest seater. It was about 1,000 people. I mean, it was more.
No, it was 2,000. 2,000 people. And there were like 26 people.
There were less than 26. There were less than 26. And we had to do it. And I was like, oh, God, this is just... And honestly, I was standing at the top and I had to run on stage naked as I did at the very beginning. And I thought, why the hell are we doing this? And then I ran on stage and then there was a heckler the whole time just heckling me from the front row. And in front of like 20 people, I had to go, are you all right?
This has really tickled me. This is really...
But we kind of realised that was our real niche, is playing small audiences in massive venues. That's
It's a creative choice. It's like, we only want to... But also what you were saying about Matt Damon, I completely appreciate that as well, because it's this, a brilliant lesson to learn is that, especially this time last year and before, I was living what I imagine on paper is a really kind of chase life. It's like it's like a... appealing life.
It's a chase life. I totally know what you mean by that. Yeah,
but I found myself for a load of different reasons, and it's probably not healthy to try and put my finger on one specific reason. But I found in that period in myself, I wasn't very happy at all, and that's such an amazing lesson to learn again so early on that you go like, oh, okay, cool. This isn't where the answer lies. Like this, although there's a lot of incredible things that came with it. That's not where the happiness is, which is a, you know, not that I know where it is, if it exists in one place, but that was a really, I feel very fortunate to have learned that for sure.
That's so good of you, man, because, you know, I think I wanted to talk about this in the second half. Perhaps we should do it now. I want to give a big shout out to your podcast, Phone a Friend, which you do with your buddy Ollie, which is, you know, it's Mental Health Awareness Week at the moment. And it's a mental health podcast about you and Ollie speaking to each other and just basically phoning up your buddy and asking how you are type thing. And you talk about loads of different things and it's amazing. So anyone who wants to go and have a listen to it, go and listen to it. Honestly, a great podcast. But you mentioned burnout. I just want to...
Jamie, you know a thing or two about that, don't you?
Well, I actually... Do you know what? I'll give a lowdown quickly of my sort of last 6-7 months or something like that. I quit alcohol in November. And I quit alcohol because I was feeling like a bit funky and a bit like, I can only describe it as being overwhelmed slightly. Mm-hmm. And so I quit alcohol. And what happened was, is that I started to feel worse. I started to feel worse and worse and worse. And this led into all the beginning of this year. And I just wasn't feeling good, feeling anxious, feeling all these different things. And finally, what I got diagnosed with, they said, you got burnout. You've been working too hard. And it was exactly that, where I had sort of lived this life of constant excitement, adrenaline all the time, and I was trying to replicate that in everyday life. So I was always looking for that next exciting bit. And if something wasn't exciting in the day, then I was like, well, this day isn't fun. What the hell's happening?
Do you think that made this lockdown more difficult for you?
Well, weirdly, actually, for me, the lockdown was a blessing, because I went into lockdown feeling incredibly burnt out, and I was able to rest and do nothing. But George, you mentioned it. Does that mean you've experienced burnout yourself?
Yeah, and the thing that, again, resonated with me that you just said is that thing of, I found myself that really simple and actually lovely things, so say it be just sitting around and watching TV with your friends, or just they're not hitting. It's like your adrenaline level has been, your threshold is bigger now because you've experienced these things, and then day-to-day life just doesn't do it. And then you start to beat yourself up for that. And it's like, well, why, something must be wrong with me if I can't just enjoy this time with the people I love or something. And I think that's a product of expectations of what you're expecting from your day and your time.
And also, I guess what you're kind of desensitized to. So, like, if you become accustomed to a certain level of like reward and dopamine from your job, like being on stage in front of 100,000 people or whatever it may be, you know, like you say, you everything else feels like it doesn't quite, get there.
There was a moment where I got off stage from a show. So I tour with my sister, which does me the world of good, and she's always come, like, early days she would help, well, try and sell t-shirts. We never got rid of many, but she's been there since then. And I remember
very rock
off...
star of you.
Yeah.
There we go again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And so, like, we came off one show, and I came off stage. Where was it? I'm pretty sure it was in London. And I said to her, I can't, this isn't healthy. And she was like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I can't, that's just made me so happy, what I've just experienced. You know, the, like, energy in the room. But I can't rely on that to make me happy, because I can't reproduce having 20,000 people in a room. You know, I can't be like, wake up and be like, oh, I want to feel that today.
Yeah, you exactly. Know? I guess if you completely depend on that, it's like ultimately unsustainable.
Yeah.
So you have to find some other way of fulfilling yourself that isn't that. To sort of almost complement that lifestyle,
but that becomes tricky then, especially in your line of work, George, because your job is to play in front of 20,000 people, and actually I said, you know, unless you're, you know, as you gain more success, you sell out bigger arenas and bigger places and more countries around the world. So everything just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. So kind of where's the limit? So, you know, and this is why, unfortunately, you see a lot of these young kids and young people, especially musicians, who end up going down a not a great path is because they're trying to replicate that. Because, you know, they don't want to go and sit and watch Jeremy Kyle in their hotel room afterwards. They want to go, you know, you go, oh, I need more of this buzz. And you keep going, and that's what happened. You go down this terrible route. So how do you stop that from happening?
But I think, again, that comes down to like personal expectations. So if I look back on, you know, and I know it's a unique thing, the kind of being a performer, that this is my experience, but I look back on playing 200 capacity rooms, and I used to come off stage and have loved it. But what you're saying with the growth, then that 200 capacity becomes 500, then 1,000, then 2,000, da, da, and then that becomes the feeling you're used to. Whereas, so I'm trying to now manage my own expectations of like, well, maybe you don't have to sell that many records. Maybe you don't have to sell that many tickets. Maybe like the happiness isn't in the numbers. It's in the actual doing of the thing, whatever level.
Yeah, the process.
And so, but that, I think that there's a... You sit in on one too many marketing meetings where you get pulled away from the reality. Like the important thing is the music. Yes. And then I started to associate music with the job that it was as well. And so then you can kind of quantify, well, if we perform here, so and so and so will happen. And it's actually reminding myself, okay, cool, that it doesn't have to be that way. You know?
Yeah, it's so interesting. We had a Vic Hope, who is such a legend, man. She Capital Radio and things like that, which just left Capital Radio. She came on and she quit Capital Radio because she wanted to remember why she fell in love with the business that she was doing. And like full credit to the girl. I mean, I think that's amazing. And I think a lot of what happens is exactly that. Is that, you know, especially for musicians, right? You go into this industry because you love playing music, you love performing, you love writing, you love creating, you love doing all these things. And actually what happens is it suddenly becomes a job and it becomes your work, and it's all about the marketing, as you said, and all those different things. And suddenly you're going, hang on a second, why am I doing this? Because, you know, and then also you sometimes may happen is that you then start being pushed in directions that you don't want to be in because creatively that works for the label or whatever. Yeah. And so I suppose for you and for, you know, because so many young musicians will be listening to you right now. How do you stay true to your music, to what you want, to your passion, all that kind of stuff? How do you stay on the right track?
How do you
track?
Not sell out?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's one of those things that it's hard to put into words because it's just something you know in yourself. So like you, and people talk about gut feelings, but you have a feeling of like, does this, I smile for 90% of my performances because I fucking love it. And so that to me is a sign that I'm doing what makes me happy. And you can, you know, it's why I get so nervous for Live Lounge, right? So Radio 1 Live Lounge.
Do you?
I hate it, man. I hate it.
Why?
Because
you're literally like my voiceover that normally plays is not...
Yeah.
Wait, you mean I can't mime?
Yeah. No, it's like, I think it's a combination. I used to get the Live Lounge CD for Christmas each year. So there's but it's also the... playing somebody else's song in my ears, it always just sounds like, why would anyone want to listen to George Ezra sing this song when they can go and listen to the song that sounds fucking brilliant? So it's like, it's not that I dislike doing it. It just makes me more nervous than anything else I know.
Because that's like an imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
What?
Completely.
But I love it because it's so interesting to see what decisions people make, you know, in singing other people's songs, isn't it?
Yeah. But I've been really fortunate in that the few times that I've done it, there's been specific criteria. So it's been like, it can be any previously Brit nominated song. So we did a Macy Gray song. Like it broadens it out. Great. Instead of it just being, it needs to be in the charts now kind of thing. which has been good.
But Judge, you get nervous for that because that just shows actually what kind of an empathetic, kind human you are. Because what you're kind of saying is you don't want to discredit the actual original song because it's just the last thing you want to do is do
but
that.
But it's kind of, you're opening the door for like, for people bad, not for criticism, yeah. Because it's like, well, no, I'm with you. Like, I would rather listen to Macy Gray's version of this song. Yeah.
I don't want to do this. But have you not gone into, so that, because I would, for me, going out, but it's probably you've done it for so long, so you're used to it, but going out in front of 20,000 people, going out in front of the O2, going out doing the Brits or whatever it is, and doing something like that where you have your guitar, you've got everyone watching you, that would freak the hell out of me. And I don't know why that... Is it because it's you feel more comfortable there because you know what you're doing rather than Radio 1 Live Lounge is not as comfortable?
Yeah, I think there's like a... I'm nervous before every performance, but it's more of a... it's an adrenaline thing, so it's not a fear thing. It's not like associated with fear. It's associated with just pure energy. But it is nerves, you know.
And I guess any live performance, there's like the unknown. What could happen? You know, things can go wrong. You know, so you're operating in that space of like, you know, anything could happen. You know, it's kind of exciting.
It's amazing, exactly that. It forces you to be where you are because it's kind of like, and actually, whilst you're performing, there's not. You're almost never really enjoying the specific moment. It's kind of like the fact that the gig 5 songs in has gone well up to that point is more of a relief than something to celebrate. You're just thinking about the next bit, you know. But then it's when you come off stage, you're like, that was the tits, or no, that didn't go so well. And you have to decide it there and then. It's like, okay, how did that sit with me?
Francis again talking... George, listen, we're all very similar. We play similar crowds. We play similar crowds. We do these things. Francis and I came off stage once and we both looked at each other and went, "You're fucking shit." You remember that time, Francis, when I went, "Francis, you're too slow," and you went, "Jamie, you're too fast." arguing.
Oh, well, we came off stage.
Yeah, we came off stage at half
time. Yeah. You're getting way too fast.
Because you do. Because I suppose, you know, also you're, you know, even though you have your band and you have your guys, it's kind of a one-man show. It's George Ezra, right? Yeah. So you have to go on stage. You have to perform. You have to do those different things. And what people forget also is you're not a robot, right? You could be having a bad day. You could be.
I always forget that.
Specifically off me.
Wait, oh, fuck. George Ezra's not a robot, is he?
Yeah.
But you must get those times where, you know, you're not quite on it, you're not feeling yourself, you're kind of just going, God, I gotta go and do this and I gotta play to 20,000 people in Louisiana or wherever it is. I don't know why I picked Louisiana. I just really want to go there.
No, it's in the Louisiana.
And you have to bring your energy. Do you just do it because you switch into performing mode? Because you know, George, you're like an Ed. You know, there are performers out there who kind of like, you know, this and that and woo, and you know, it's all about the movements and things like that. You're kind of authentic with your guitar. You sound it. It's about the music. It's about you. It's about the kind of connecting with the crowd. So if you're not feeling it, how do you bring that kind of performer attitude?
I think often you can have a day full of nonsense and you can have a day that just takes out of you. This is on tour. It's like certainly on the first record as well, it would be like you need to be up at 6 a.m. for breakfast radio, and then also there's going to be this radio station down the road is doing a bit where they're going to interview just before you go on stage and then just after, and all of that is, I know it's necessary and can be enjoyable, but in the day it takes your mind out of the fact that you're performing that night and it becomes chaff. It's like, okay, but what that means is that even if you're having a bad day, the performance at the end of the day is the release for me. So it's almost like the promo and the interviews and all of that is the bit that I see as a job, and then it's the performing is like a treat for me at the end of the day. It's kind of like you've earned the right to do the thing you enjoy by, you know, filling your days with the stuff that means you can do this.
Do you ever get when you're performing and you see like comedians do, when you see someone in the crowd who's not enjoying their time or not, I do you stop and go, hold on a second, oi you, why are you not going, Amber and Ratty Jack?
yeah, but like every single show I've ever done, right, and I can picture like specific ones right now. I'm picturing one in Ireland. We finished one festival season at this festival and it kicked off. It was just insane. But there was one dad that had so obviously been dragged along that was so unimpressed. And instead of looking at everyone on the shoulders and the singing along and, you know, the hands in the air, I ignored all of that. And just for the whole song, I was like, I'm going to make you fucking smile. I'm going to make you at least tap your feet. So it's like, instead of being able to enjoy this beautiful thing, I'm focused on this middle-aged, you know, knobhead that doesn't want to be there. And no, do you know what? He's not a knobhead. He just didn't want to be there, you know? But you know, that happens again and again and again.
But it must have added like a unique kind of
intensity.
Intensity to the whole performance. Yeah.
You just staring at the
yeah. But it happens every time. But what does that say about like,
exactly. your,
like, why can't you enjoy what's so evidently a good thing because of one tiny negative thing?
Yeah, because what we do, why do we do that as humans? You know, you have a million thoughts a second or whatever it is, but you pick out the one negative thought. You look into the crowd and you see how many thousand people having like a lovely time and you see one middle-aged bloke having not a fun time. You're like, well, I need to change that. Why is that? Why can't we just accept the good and we focus on the negative for some reason?
It's like we all get ourselves where you beat yourself up. You know, you hear about, friend, you were saying about how you quit drinking, which is amazing. And congratulations for doing that.
I'm still drinking. I went back to drinking again. Okay. I have.
But Jamie, I think it's still good to do, like I like to do just stints of reminding yourself that you can.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is, you know, you wake up with the fear, right? So you wake up, your mate will ring you and they're in a spot because they're like, you know, the classic, what did I say last night? Was I an idiot? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And instead of them thinking about people are just wired to want to beat themselves up. It's like, yeah. I don't know why. It's like your heart. And also what me and Ollie talk on our podcast a lot about, or we find ourselves returning to, is the fact that we're so sympathetic for people around us. And someone can say something that they've done and you're like, well, don't worry. Like, we all love you. It's fine. You're a good person. And then you do something similar and in your head, you're the villain. You're like, why does anyone put up with me? I'm a horrible person. And we set different standards for ourselves to those. I don't know.
Yeah, I went into the supermarket today and I went up to the guy at the cashier and he made a joke. And I try to give a joke back and it wasn't funny and I left disappointed because I haven't entertained. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The cashier in Sainsbury's, he's going to hate me.
I think we are our own worst critics, right? And people, you know, you kind of have, I guess also if you want to, if you're ambitious, you want to succeed, you've got things you want to do, you are critical of yourself, you are hard on yourself in order to raise your game. So I think it's a sort of give and take thing. But yeah, sometimes people can be too hard on themselves, too much of a perfectionist.
It's too that. Right, ladies and gentlemen, we got to that moment in the podcast where, Francis, we need to have the question of the week.
All right.
Here we go.
Where's the name Ezra from?
It's my middle name.
So it's not your surname.
No, it's my middle name, and I've got two or three great granddads
surnames.
Yeah, are you
triple barreled?
Are you English or are you Scottish or?
I'm English.
English. Yeah. All right. So, Jamie, you consider yourself Scottish, don't you?
Yeah, half Scottish. Why? What's that? Is this the question?
The question is, how many words does the Scottish language have for snow? How many different words?
How many different words does the Scottish language have for so. Is that because you thought George was Scottish? Is that why?
No. I thought I'd see how relevant it was to both of you. But I know you claim to be Scottish. But
okay, George, as our guest, you have to guess first.
Well, it's either going to be. I think it's going to be a lot, otherwise it wouldn't be a question, I think. I feel like it's going to be like...
Or none at all.
Is weird. France is weird. Yeah, none. Yeah, there isn't one.
I'm going to say 19.
19.
19 words for snow. 19. Shit. I was going to go way low. Okay, Francis, I'm going to go... God, there's going to be more. It's going to be way more than 19. Okay, I'm going to go... I'm going to go 100.
100?
Yeah, I'm going to go 100. Just gone for it. I've gone for it.
All right. Okay, well, we'll find out in part two.
All right, George, listen, we've got to stop there because we're going to go into part two. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. Oh, mate, I'm just having an epic time.
I love this.
Francis,
shit.
We're sitting with George Ezra.
I know. I can't believe it.
Mate, what?
My mind is blown.
I thought you said my mum is going to be so happy.
My mum is going to be so happy.
That's normally what I get, yeah.
Yeah, I get that all the time. So people come up to me and go, my mum or my grandma thinks you're so good looking. I'm like, man. What about me? Also, that before we go into part, that's what my girlfriend said to me. My girlfriend said to me the other day, I showed her a picture of this guy. And she went, I went, oh, he's a good looking guy. And she went, yeah, but I don't really like pretty boys. And I went, what do you mean? She went, well, I kind of like, you know, rugged. And I went, I'm not even rugged. Like, she went, oh, you know, you're sweet.
Yeah.
Went, what do you mean? What do you mean? I was like, she went, well, you know, you're not really good looking. I was like, what?
Jeez, just what I want to hear.
Yeah, sweet. All right, everyone, see you in part two. See you in a second. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.